Welcome to Share a Pint, where we tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host. Today we're talking with Corey Mall from Manor Hill Brewing. Thanks for being on the show, Corey.
My pleasure.
Manor Hill was the first farm brewery in Howard County. What unique challenges did that present?
So being the first, you're sort of trailblazing for all the local laws and regulations that haven't been figured out yet. Mm-hmm. So we're lucky to have my father-in-law as part of the team, who has a lot of friends and connections in both the industry and in Annapolis, and was able to help kind of figure out how Howard County's place fits in the farm brewery world. Mm-hmm. So it was just not knowing the answers and having to find them out because nobody had done it before us. We did reach out to some of the other local breweries, not farm breweries, we're class eight. Mm-hmm. Owner of a restaurant in Howard County, we bought a lot of beer before we ever opened our own brewery. So we had a lot of connections and friends in Howard County that we were able to reach out to other brewers in Maryland and able to learn a lot from them. But Farm Brewery had its own unique challenges that they didn't have to face. So we learned what we could from the friends and those in the beer community around us.
Mm-hmm. What might be one or two of the challenges that are very specific to a farm brewery that, you know, a standard brewery wouldn't run into?
So one of the biggest ones that we face specifically here in Howard County is our local zoning restrictions, which limit us to only 50 visitors at a time at the brewery.
Okay.
So in order to manage and handle that situation, we've added a reservation system. Mm-hmm. It's not ideal. A lot of people think of breweries as a very low-key kind of pop in and grab a beer whenever you want to. Mm-hmm. But when we first opened the tap room, we didn't prepare for the pent-up demand to visit our tap room that had existed at the time. Uh-huh. And we quickly found out that there were going to be more than 50 people here at a time if we didn't figure out a way to manage that. Mm-hmm. So we implemented that reservation system solely to make sure that there weren't more than 50 people here, mm-hmm. and to make sure that if people did plan to come here, they weren't turned away because we were at capacity.
Yeah, so, I was going to ask if there was any, you know, and I'm sure there were instances where you ran into it where, you know, you had people that didn't know and showed up without reservation. And, you know, I've been here a few times, and, you know, I was one of those things where I had looked ahead of time and so that I knew. So I'm prepared when they're like, hey, do you have a reservation? Or if we start your tab, they check and say, hey, you're good, don't worry about it. But did you have any instances where you ran into people that didn't know and did it present any problems, or how do you work around that?
So similar to, we've kind of likened it to airlines and hotels where mm-hmm. there's no shows and there's cancellations uh-huh. and there's people that might come for a half hour and then leave, and then some people show up a half hour later. So we figured out kind of that magic number uh-huh. to make sure that we had a buffer, so people that do walk in or people that come in just for to-go sales, mm-hmm. that kind of constant in and out doesn't impact, you know, the 50 person, and it keeps everybody that wants to come here that can stay here, so we don't have to turn people away. We really haven't had any unfortunate instances where we've had to send people away because we were at capacity, because we've been able to manage that buffer and okay. allow for some of that kind of folks that still haven't been trained, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Well, that's good though. I mean, because again, you've now overcome an obstacle that, again, a lot of people aren't going to run into something like that, and so they wouldn't understand the challenges that could present and what that could do for, you know, the public opinion if you'd returned away because they didn't know. But it's great that you guys found a way to work through that obstacle and within the zoning laws you had.
Yeah, it's taken us a couple years, and again, it's not ideal, but it's the world we live in, and it's the laws that we're bound by, so we figured out how to kind of get by on them. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Well, we talked a little bit before about the fact that Tom Barse over at Milk House Brewery, they were the first farm brewery in Maryland. Did they help you with any unique challenges of being a farm brewery that you might not have had another model to go to ask for?
So of course, I mean, we're good friends with Milk House. We attend their festival every year. We pour at their event. They have a big one on their farm every spring. And so when we started the process, we actually started the process around the same time as everyone else in the state. It just took a little longer for local legislation to kind of match what the state had provided. So Tom was ahead of us. And as we're kind of getting up to speed and starting to build out our brewery, we certainly reached out and asked questions about his interpretation of the farm brewery legislation for, you know, growing crops and what you need to do to adhere to that and the different rules that apply at the state level, because the county level, like we just said, is so different and unique to Howard County versus I think
They're in Frederick County.
So we had our own unique challenges that we just had to figure out ourselves and talk to you know, zoning and planning directly or the other local legislators, but from a, like, how are you guys dealing with this as a farm brewery? For sure, they were very instrumental in helping us figure that out.
Great. Well, as a farm, you grow a number of your own ingredients, one of which is hops, and I know there's four different hops that you grow. So maybe tell me a little bit about the hops you grow and then how they play a role, as well as the other things that you produce here, how they find their way into your beers and how you use them.
Yeah, so the four hops that we grow, we have 2 1/3 acres of hops in the field out front, and it's Chinook, Cascade, Nugget, and Centennial are the four varieties. They're the hardiest, they're the most well-suited to the Maryland climate. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not an ideal climate still, and the University of Maryland School of Agriculture is heavily involved in helping farms, and we've reached out to them, and they've been by to help us figure out kind of what it's going to take for hops to survive in this climate. I think Flying Dog has a really strong relationship with them as well. Mm-hmm. So we're still kind of figuring out what hop farming is all about. Because we have some good years and then we have some not so good years. And we still, when we harvest, we still pelletize our hops. We send them off to get kilned and dried so that we use them in our recipes in that capacity as opposed to the fresh hops. Just because our recipes call for the hop pellets as opposed to fresh hops. But what we've started doing more of so that we don't have to rely on the erratic hop crops is using our corn. So there's 14 acres of corn just in front of all the hops. It was just harvested this week. We use that in our Pilsner, and we have a silo now that was added this week. So that's non-GMO corn that is harvested and then put in the silo. And that corn is used in our Pilsner. It adds some sweetness and body in the Pilsner. And then we use it in a couple other beers throughout the year. But namely our Pilsner, which is now our number 2 brand in our portfolio. And then we'll do small barrel or special projects that leverage the fruits and vegetables and herbs from Mary's Garden. We send a lot of that stuff to our restaurants, but whenever there's a particularly large batch of blackberries or blueberries that's worth putting in a beer or that we have enough that the restaurants don't take it all, then we hold some back to be able to use here. In fact, Mary started testing out the soil by the hop field to expand her blackberry crop because blackberries do really well on the farm here. And so there's an opportunity to possibly do more blackberries to then actually have something that we can do either seasonally or year round with blackberries.
Well, I'm a blackberry fan, so that's good to hear. And actually, since I'm drinking this new Kinetic calibration, or it seems like it's a series, so this would be the latest in the series with this combination of flavors. Tell me a little bit about this one, and then are there any of your berries grown here that are used in this?
So not in this particular beer, because this was done at a larger scale. So this was Kinetic Calibration, which is one of our First Friday beers. So the first Friday of every month, we release 2 new beers. We do them in a 30-barrel batch and get anywhere from like 150 cases and then a little bit of draft that we make available to the public that first Friday. This Kinetic Calibration, we've done a tangerine and I don't remember the other citrus. And this is the blueberry, raspberry, and vanilla version. So this doesn't use any of our fruit just because the batch was too large and we did it in a larger capacity. But yeah, so that's one of the series that we've done kind of on a occasional level. And then it gives the brewers a chance to not just have to come in every day and brew Pilsner, IPA, Amber, Porter, like just they're not brewing the same thing every day. They get to have an opportunity to try a new recipe, use some new ingredients, use some new hops, collaborate with other breweries. It's kind of our opportunity to play on a monthly level, basically.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into, I know that when you had released this one recently, you also released another one. Tell me about the Gentleman's Game and kind of the collab that you've done, because you just talked about collabing with other places. So
Matt from Astrolab is friends with one of our employees, our operations manager, Eric Leeson, and so they were talking about getting together to do a beer, and Matt's from New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
So he introduced us to some cool New Zealand hops, Motueka.
Yeah.
That was kind of highlighted in the Gentleman's Game, and Gentleman's Game is another name for cricket. It's got some distinction to New Zealand. So that beer uses some New Zealand hops and some North American hops so that we could kind of bring his style and his experience with ours. It turned out to be a really good IPA. that was released alongside of the Kinetic Calibration.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, tell me about any other of your flagship beers that maybe have interesting stories.
Yeah, so we've done a good job of balancing our core beers, which mm-hmm. are the IPA, Pilsner, Amber, which don't typically have the clever kind of witty names. Mm-hmm. They're just something that's familiar that somebody goes into their liquor store and can be like, oh, I know I like ambers, I'm going to try this local amber. Mm-hmm. Or I know I like lagers, here's a Pilsner, I'm going to give this one a try.
Yeah.
So those names don't get quite as interesting or have as interesting of backstories, other than the recipes are all developed here and they're unique to us and they're ones that we've kind of dialed in and kind of honed over the years. But one of our kind of growing maybe adjacent core beers mm-hmm. is Crooked Beak. Mm-hmm. So that was named after we have 24 hens and a rooster in the chicken coop behind the brewery here. And so the first rooster that we had, his beak, and if you look at the cans, his beak is actually doesn't touch, it's crooked.
Uh-huh.
And when we got him, we weren't sure if he was going to be able to feed himself and like get kernels and food. And he ended up doing fine and thriving. And was the only rooster among all the hens that we had. Just this past fall, though, we had a fox incident. And,
oh, no.
And we think Crooked Beak actually protected the other hens in his kind of heroic efforts to to get rid of the fox, but he didn't survive.
So
Crooked Beak is now sort of an honorary beer of our original rooster. We've since gotten a new rooster.
Okay.
But that's kind of something that's really fun about being here on the farm. It's it's unique to anywhere else that you can visit in this area, that, you know, we have cows and chickens and bees and all kinds of other things that are part of our story.
Right.
And so Crooked Beak has been a really popular beer. The passion fruit version of it won a gold medal at the Comptroller's Cup this past year. And we're in 2020 going to start expanding what we're calling the Chicken Coop series.
Okay.
So all of the chickens have names, and we're going to start doing a series of beers that involve those chickens. And our head brewer, Kurt Kroll, is an amazing artist. So a lot of the artwork that you see on our cans, either I've drawn or he's drawn, and the ones that have more of the watercolor stencil sketch style to them, like Crooked Beak, are the ones that he's done.
Okay.
He's actually already drawn for one of our restaurants, because it's the artwork in the restaurant, all the different chickens that we have, and we're just going to start putting that as some occasional releases we'll be doing throughout 2020. So we're excited about kind of showcasing more of the farm stuff that makes us who we are, and letting people see that we have these fun chickens that when you come visit us, you're allowed to wander back there and check them out too.
Nice, that's pretty good. Well, you just mentioned the restaurants again, so tell me, you know, for those of people that don't know, you guys supply for three restaurants that obviously benefit from, as you've already talked a little bit about, the things that you're growing here. So how does that add to the experience and the brand and the mission of Manor Hill, having those three restaurants?
I think it's important. So Victoria Gastropub, which is today is its 13th anniversary. We're about to start our 14th year of Victoria Gastropub. So that was our, you know, original craft beer kind of entry into this world. And so we owe a lot to Victoria Gastropub, not just the food, but the craft beer program there, introducing us to this world and kind of inspiring us to get into brewing. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the story. We had already owned this restaurant, and farm brewery legislation had passed, and we were like, well, we already own a farm, and we own a restaurant that serves craft beer. Let's brew a little bit of beer to serve in our restaurants. And you start getting all this stainless steel equipment, and you start hiring a team, and you quickly realize that not only do you need to make more beer in order to pay back some of that capital, but we also were fortunate enough to have the demand and the fan base that wanted our beer.
Oh.
So that's kind of how we organically grew from initially thinking we were just going to brew a little bit of beer to serve at our restaurant, to then, you know, actually brewing beer in a full production capacity.
I have been to that one before. A friend of mine loves that place.
Yeah.
Loves that place, and actually turned me onto it. And you're right, you know, on top of being a really nice restaurant with some quality food, they have a really good craft beer selection. And so I can kind of see where your hand and fingerprint of not just your brewers in particular, but what you guys like and what you guys want to put out there for the community to try. Clearly, that's a place where people can go and enjoy that.
Yeah, so Victoria Gastropub was our when we did our launch party and when we released our beer, we were lucky to have a place like that that we could tell all of our regulars and all of our guests, hey, our beer is going to be here, you know, June of 2000, and well, the launch party was, I think, earlier than that, but in June of 2015, because 2020 is going to be our 5-year anniversary. So it was great to have that outlet. And then, since we've opened the brewery, we actually opened Manor Hill Tavern in Old Ellicott City, and that served a great purpose as being an extension of our tap room. So they have just our beer on tap, which is great because with this place only open 2 days a week and having zoning restrictions, we're allowed to kind of tell people about Manor Hill Tavern as a possible place to go and get some of our more limited release beers and kind of get some of the smaller batch stuff that you might not see out in the marketplace, because Manor Hill Tavern serves as that sort of extension of our farm. And then the most recent restaurant that we opened, Food Plenty, which is just a couple miles down the road, because of its proximity, actually benefits from most of the fresh ingredients from the farm. So when we have vegetables and berries in season here, you know, it's 4 miles down the road, so they get a lot of it. And the concept there is really fresh local ingredients, and we try and provide as many of those from our farm or other kind of neighboring farms as much as we can. So all three restaurants, and all three carry our beer, obviously, but also have like a very unique kind of place in the farm story. And we tried to make sure that they didn't kind of take away from each other. So you could visit all three of them in a week and not have the same meal and not have the same experience, but all connected by Manor Hill and our family.
That's great. That's great branding and obviously foresight from the business of how you, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
really keeping them nearby, make sure that we're able to check in and stop by. And you know, it's not, it's a lot of work to run a lot of restaurants. So having them close in proximity allows us to share staff and allows the owners to be present and be involved and be, you know, meeting our guests and stop by and say hi to them when they're eating their dinner. So they know when we say we're family owned, we're there. We mean it. We're not just, you know.
They see you enough to know that that's not just a catchphrase. That's great. Well, we talked a little bit earlier about probably one of the bigger challenges with being in a rural community was that zoning law and how it affects having to have reservations and how many people you have here. Are there any other particular challenges of being in a rural community that you face that maybe other breweries don't? Because a lot of times you'll see breweries in more of an industrial park or isolated area, and clearly with a farm brewery you can't do that. So being connected to your neighbors in your community, how do you balance that?
Yeah, and I think it's the challenge also is an opportunity for us. So the challenge is that we're off the beaten path, secluded. If you, I often say to people, if you don't know, if you're not looking for it, you wouldn't know that we exist. Manor Lane isn't like a major intersection. 108 gets pretty far west in Howard County, so folks that are in the more kind of densely populated areas might not venture out this way quite as often. So it's not something that has signage out off of the highways or, you know, signs that say turn left here for Manor Hill. So finding us can be a bit of a challenge. And people, even once they turn, you still have to go a mile and a half back the road until it like opens up on a farm. But once you get there, it's like that hidden gem that you didn't even know existed in this area.
So it's
kind of like that, you know, you found it and then it's that little, you know, pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that that they found. So it's a challenge, but it also does present us with something that's very unique, and people that know about us and know where we are, it's easy for them to recommend and give the word of mouth, because like, no, trust me, just keep going down that road and then
you're not lost, and then
you'll see it. And and it's a beautiful space, and
absolutely,
it's a great view, and they have good beer. And so we feel like that while we're not in the densely populated office parks and the areas where people can walk to us and people can, you know, quickly Uber around, we feel we offer some other things that hopefully more than make up for it.
Absolutely. And you know, I know that remembering how I found this place and all, and it was a little bit of a combination of, you know, using Untappd and kind of searching for the area, but being at some other places in the area as well, and they were like, hey, have you been to Manor Hill? And your beers are also out there enough that the name and the presence is there, and then people are like, well, you know that they're, you know, a couple of miles away, or they're such and such a location. And you're like, so yeah, word of mouth is definitely being spread out there, and that helps as well.
Yeah, we've tried to balance, you had mentioned seeing us out in the marketplace, like that's definitely been a growth strategy for us, making sure that our beers while, you know, we love to have them sold here and at our restaurants, making sure our beer is available and making sure the beer that we put out there is stuff that's approachable and folks that might still be dipping their toes in the craft beer market see something and they're like, oh, that's an IPA. That's really good. That's not what I thought an IPA was. Yeah. Or they're like, oh, I usually don't like dark beer. And then they try one of ours and they're like, oh, that's pretty good. And so then it just kind of builds that familiarity that, you know, deepens their kind of loyalty to the brand. And when they come here, then that just kind of changes the game, hopefully.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, where can people find you online? Website, Facebook, Instagram,
Twitter? So we're online, ManorHillBrewing.com. We also do have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The handle is at ManorHillBrew.
Okay.
So we put out stories almost every day where you can see the sunrise on the farm or hear the new rooster crow, watch the bees, you know, produce honey. So we try and mix in a lot of our content that we put online with brewing and farm life. So it kind of showcases those two kind of dichotomies that we have going on here.
Well, that's awesome. Well, we'll definitely put that in our show notes and we'll have it on our website at shareapintpodcast.com.
Great.
Well, we've learned about the brewery. Let's get to know a little bit more about you, Corey. Okay. Tell me about your role or roles that you play here in the brewery and even with all the connected things that you're saying with the restaurants and that kind of stuff.
So my background is in marketing. So prior to opening any restaurants or any breweries, I was working for companies in DC doing consulting, working for Unite Healthcare, AARP, Marriott, just a 9-to-5 corporate branding, marketing, advertising, all in that world, dealing with agencies and just a traditional 9-to-5, commuting sometimes an hour and a half each way. As the first restaurant was open, Victoria Gastropub, nights and weekends or on the side, I'd start, you know, helping them with promotions of events or when they were doing pint nights, help them with how to publicize that, help them with social media, just doing what I knew from my corporate world, but at this very different level in this very different industry. And as the brewery came on board, same thing, started helping, you know, with the labels. Kurt, like I mentioned, draws a lot of our labels, but they still need to be kind of submitted to various agencies. They need to have a certain look and feel and to have a consistent brand image. So helping to develop what is our brand going to be, what kind of parameters are we going to work with when as we develop Manor Hill and as it grows. So my demands for working at the brewery and the restaurants became more and more in that marketing capacity that at one point just the table turned and I had to leave my job in DC and come on board full time. So I'm chief marketing officer for the three restaurants, the brewery. We also own a production company and a couple other small side businesses just to keep us busy. I've maintained that role that I used to do off the side of my desk, but now coming on board full time, it's allowed me to absorb a lot more and be more involved in kind of the strategic plans for the different companies. So, you know, what's the vision for our restaurant as we move into 2020 for the brewery? What do we want to be? Like, where are we going to grow? What have other breweries done when they've gone from year four to year five that we want to achieve? So helping to get more involved. I'm still not putting on boots and stepping into the brew house. That's not my experience, and I know, you know, where I have strengths and where I don't. But definitely being more engaged with all of those businesses and kind of how to help them grow and succeed and be kind of in the market.
Were there any particular challenge you personally faced when you finally decided, hey, I'm gonna make this shift? Because obviously there's so much crossover between what you were doing in quote unquote the business corporate world versus here in the craft beer industry. Was there any of that, do I really want to make this leap? Is this the right leap? People saying, hey, that was a great choice, but why are you doing that? People that maybe didn't understand. I mean, how was that decision for you personally in that transition?
Yeah, so so my wife is the CFO of the organization.
Okay.
And so it was literally us putting then all of our eggs in one basket.
Like,
is this the right thing? You know, you're leaving this like safe, like
sure thing
to jump into a small business that has its ups and downs and has its craziness. We're going to be seeing each other every day. Like, is this something we're ready for? And we were. I mean, it was something we knew was the plan all along. It was just the timing happened, you know, when it did. And so the biggest challenge for me was when you're in any small business, you're not just marketing. I mean, I'm IT, you know, you're doing all kinds of things. You're, you know,
wearing a lot of hats.
Yeah, you're maintenance. Like somebody shows up to fix something and you have to figure out what they're supposed to do and figure out how to get things done. So it's rewarding because at the end of the day, you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, all of that stuff just got accomplished. Mm-hmm. You didn't expect to do it that day, but right. it happened. So that was the biggest change is, you know, getting used to like, oh, I'm going into my 9-to-5 job today and I know exactly what I'm going to be working on. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to hand it to someone else who's going to do their part. And you're like a cog in a big corporate wheel. And now all of a sudden it's like, no, I'm just doing it. And right. if it's going to get done, then I have to do it. So,
well, with that, were there any particular times where, man, like I said, if I was in this business world where I was before, I knew it was just this. Yeah. But today, I really wanted to, or I felt I needed to get X, Y, and Z done, but I had to do 15 different little tiny things that you said happened in a smaller business, and then you didn't get those things done. When you face those types of challenges and things, what's getting you through? What's saying, hey, this was still the right decision, not, oh, should I have not done this? Or
I think, I mean, being part of the family-owned business, something that we started and we groomed it and grew it, you have this sense of pride and this ownership over, and not literal ownership, just you feel like it's yours and you want to make it flourish and you want to do whatever you need to. So at the end of the day, you kind of realize like what you're doing it all for. You're doing it for yourself and for this brand that you love and you believe in and all these people here that are our family, whether related or employees, they're our family. And so that's what keeps you grounded and makes you want to keep doing it when the days aren't quite what you expected them to be.
Okay. So family being probably the biggest contributor to success.
Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't help that I have an hour and a half back in my day each way, not commuting to DC.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, sure.
It gives you a lot of time to not just spend with my family here, but also my family at home.
Right.
You know, it's more found time that I didn't have when I was commuting to Washington, DC every day.
That's a good trade-off. You know, and I've talked to a couple of other people, and I've said that, you know, obviously there's challenges every day and in everything that people do, but there's probably never really a bad day at a brewery.
Right. Yeah. you can always grab a beer if it gets too rough.
Or
right?
if you feel bad about it, you hear from your corporate friends how their day was, and you're like, yeah, my day really wasn't that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Well, once again, where can we find you guys online?
So we're at ManorHillBrewing.com, and then we're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at ManorHillBrew is our handle.
Sounds great. We'll put that on the website and on our show notes. Well, great. Corey, I want to thank you for your time and for sharing a pint with me.
Cheers.
Share a Pint is released biweekly on Friday mornings and can be found at ShareAPintPodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at Share_Pint. Show notes for this episode are available at ShareAPintPodcast.com. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin MacLeod, and can be found online at Incompetech.com. Share a Pint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at ShareAPintPodcast.com or email us at Jerry@ShareAPintPodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Hulla. Prost.